This is Radio Free Pro Wrestling, your home for smart and stunning wrestling debates with lifelong wrestling fans, Sean and Ashley. Let the debate begin.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of Radio Free Professional Wrestling. I'm your stunning one, Sean, and I'm along with my tag team partner, the groovy one, Ashley. Ashley, it's been an interesting week of professional wrestling and one heck of a busy weekend because I feel like I watched about 8 shows this weekend. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Yeah, a lot of wrestling this week. I still have a few shows to catch up on.
So that's why we're here. We're here to help you figure out what you should watch, what you can throw into the trash can. So sit back, relax, and let's enjoy this next hour of professional wrestling debate between me and Ashley. And we're going to open up the show with our review of WWE Elimination Chamber, which came from Perth, Australia. And for us East Coast on the United States, it was 5 o'clock in the morning. Ashley, I got up at 3:55 a.m. Not planning on watching this live, but once I got up, I said, hey, I'm going to run with this sucker. And for those people who did the Twitter poll to see how long I would last, I'm sorry, guys. A lot of people put the main event. I fell asleep during the Grayson Waller effect.
Yeah, I mean, with the 4 matches, they did kind of stretch it out a bit, so.
You know, it's kind of interesting. They actually had 5 matches. If you watch the pre-show, they had Annie Hartwell, Candice LeRae versus Kabuki Warriors for the WWE Women's Tag Team titles. That was a fine match. I was happy Andy got on this card since she's from Australia. The crowd really warmed up to her. I was hoping they would flip the titles over to her, that team of Indy and Candice, because, I mean, like, what a good way to get some goodwill with this crowd. Like, let the hometown girl get the titles. No, it's like, Insane Elbow, Kabuki Waters retained the titles, and we're back to the kickoff show for another 15 minutes or so.
Yeah, no, great way to start off the show, and kind of like a good night for the women in WWE. 2 really good matches.
Well, you know what? They kicked off the show with a proper Elimination Chamber match. It was the women's Elimination Chamber match, and this was the best match on the card. Now, you can debate whether or not you think Becky Lynch should have been one that won this Elimination Chamber, but the breakout star of this chamber was one Tiffany Stratton, because I got a feeling if Tiffany Stratton ever wanted to run for any kind of office, she could move to Australia and be the next prime minister.
Shows, like I said, that they're building her properly, because, like, what a great reaction for her to get. It just entering the match. I thought Bianca Belair looked fantastic, and Becky most certainly deserves the
pick. You know, you got to look at it. I mean, she spent the last year, 1 year ago, she started this tag team partnership with Lita heading into last year's WrestleMania. Then she had her feud with Trish. She went down to NXT, actually elevated Tiffany Stratton, had a great match with Lyra Valkyria, had an NXT title for a couple of months, elevated that title, came back up to the main roster, and here we are. We're heading into WrestleMania with the biggest match on the women's side they can possibly make. Rhea Ripley versus the man, Becky Lynch.
Hey, and who's to say you don't have Becky Lynch win the title? And guess who has some history and is very popular right now and up and coming? Tiffany Stratton. You could certainly run that back in for the women's world title there.
You know what? Going into Money in the Bank in June, my odd-on favorite to win Money in the Bank coming up in June is going to be Tiffany Stratton. Go ahead, make the bet, put the money down. I got a feeling about this one.
You can see her cashing in on Becky Lynch and like I said, just drawing back on all the stuff they ran it through in NXT and kind of having a good feud there. And possibly maybe Becky Lynch helping to crown Tiffany Stratton.
Very true. So we move on to our second match of the night. It is for the WWE Tag Team titles, as we've seen the Judgment Day with Dominic Mysterio, who was getting booed out of the stadium. This was the loudest boo I have ever heard for Dominic Mysterio. And they defeated the newly named New Catch Republic, which is Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate. Ashley, how do you feel about the New Catch Republic as a name?
I think it could fit. I think it might take some.
I mean, it was a fine match. It was the atypical Judgment Day storyline where Dominic Mysterio would cause the interference. They boot Dominic Mysterio, and Judgment Day won after Damian Priest hit a double, like, south of heaven on Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate. So we move on to possibly seeing Miz and R-Truth, who was in Austria instead of Australia. He got a little confused. But I got a feeling that's going to be the WrestleMania match. It's going to be Miz and R-Truth a reunification of Awesome Truth versus the Judgment Day for WrestleMania. And that's going to be one hell of a match.
Yeah, that could be good. I would love to see. Do you think they have a win?
See, there's the thing. You still got Damian Priest with this freaking title from the Money in the Bank. Do you cash in? And really, R-Truth has done some amazing work. I kind of want to see R-Truth have the title with Miz. And they can be transitional champions and let Finn go his own way and Damian Priest go his other way. I mean, like, I feel like the Judgment Day has basically done everything they can possibly do with these titles.
Yeah, I think I would like to see them go after some single titles. Like, have Damian Priest go cash in and maybe have Finn go after, like, the U.S. title.
Well, you know, it's kind of funny you say the U.S. title because we're going over to the next match. It's the Men's Elimination Chamber match. And it was just a step below the women's. And we did see Drew McIntyre win this match after AJ Styles made it into the ring somehow and laid the lumber to LA Knight with a steel chair. So looks like LA Knight versus AJ Styles for WrestleMania. It also looks like in this match, it's going to be Randy Orton versus Logan Paul for the U.S. title at WrestleMania. That should be a fun match as well.
Yeah, I was a big fan of Kevin Owens in this match.
Kevin Owens was amazing in this match.
Very fired up.
It's interesting because now coming out of this, you think you got Orton paired with Paul. It kind of leaves Kevin Owens kind of loose. Maybe you make it a triple threat with Logan Paul versus Orton and Kevin Owens. That could work.
Yeah. Especially after that, I could definitely see them doing something like that.
But at the end of the day, Drew McIntyre got the win. He's heading off to face Seth Rollins. And I got a feeling this is where Seth Rollins drops that title and goes off to get rehab. Even though during the Grayson Waller fight, at this event, he announced that he's days away from being medically cleared. So maybe Drew doesn't get the win at WrestleMania?
I think it would be crazy to not give Drew the win after kind of like all the stuff he's been doing, especially like on social media, like all the calling out and stuff like that, all the kind of talking he's been doing. I kind of would like to see him win the title being in this persona.
I do too. I just hope they pull the trigger, let Drew have this title run. Let him run it through to like SummerSlam, then you can think about what you want to do for the fall. Let's go to the last match at Elimination Chamber. And it's Rhea Ripley versus Nia Jax. And it was probably Nia Jax's best match to date. But yet, Rhea Ripley in her home country retains the title. There's one spot in this match that's kind of crazy. Is the Nia Jax trying to break the announcer table without removing the iPad's video monitors there. She slams Rhea Ripley right onto the monitors. I'm going like, oh my God, you got to remove those things.
Yeah, that's going to hurt. I know there was a lot of like trepidation, like before this match, people were a little worried about kind of like the opponent choice, but like, I'm glad it worked out and the match turned out better than I think people thought.
You know what? I got to say, we were some of those people who were kind of worried about this match lasting longer than 5 minutes, and this thing did last longer than 5 minutes, and it was perfectly fine. And I don't know where Nia Jax goes from here, but if they can find the right person that can carry her through a match like a Rhea Ripley, then you can have someone to work there with, especially since The Rock is in WWE now.
Sure.
Okay, that wraps up our Elimination Chamber review here on Radio Free Professional Wrestling. We are going over to our stunning six questions of the week as we debate six of the hottest topics in professional wrestling.
Time to ring the bell. As Sean and Ashley debate six stunning questions from the week of wrestling. All the whys and what the hell was that?
Okay, Ashley, my first stunning question for you. Is New Japan Pro Wrestling making a panic move by placing titles on both Matt Riddle and Nick Nev? If you haven't watched the last two shows from New Japan Pro Wrestling, the first night of New Beginnings in Sapporo, we saw Matt Riddle beat Tanahashi for the NJPW TV title in about 8 minutes. And the main event of that night was Nick Namath versus David Finlay. And Nick Namath ends the night with a global title, which kind of surprised me because I felt like they were pushing David Finlay there because they gave the War Dogs that big victory a week ago in that cage match.
First of all, the Finlay and Nemeth match was very good. So if you haven't seen that one, go check that one out. I think it is a strange call because, like you said, like it sort of makes sense in a sense. Like he did just go through that cage match. It would make sense. Like his body would be beat up. He would get taken advantage of by a much fresher opponent. But it doesn't make any sense when I feel like you're trying to legitimize David Finlay, who I feel kind of desperately needs like a big push to be taken a little more seriously as the leader of this version of the Bullet Club. I'm not exactly on board with changing it right off the bat. There's always Bullet Club shenanigans. You could have just pulled something like that to help him title. So yeah, I don't really agree with that call. But the Tanahashi call, I feel like this is going to depend on if Riddle is coming to Japan. It feels like he might be here a little more long.
Well, my first thought was maybe they want to get the title off Tanahashi because he's the president in Japan Pro Wrestling. Maybe they wanted to break away from that. And hey, it's Matt Riddle. It's a big name they got to bring into the company. They just lost Will Ospreay, Okada. So why not? Really, it's the TV title. Bigger one I had an issue with was the fact you're trying to build David Finlay into the new big bad heel that runs the place. He should have beat Nick Nav in Nick Nav's first match in New Japan Pro Wrestling. That's just me.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's why I said I think it's a very strange call. And like with Matt Riddle, like we kind of speculated like maybe he could come in and join United Empire with Will Ospreay leaving, and it maybe sort of seems like that's maybe the idea floating around. Like he joined them this week at the second show in a big tag match. So like maybe there's something a little more long term. And I do think, like you said, President Tanahashi has a little bit more going on right now than just in-ring stuff. But trying to legitimize David Finlay as this leader of the Bullet Club, I think was kind of desperately needed. And you had the right idea with having the cage match and everything like that and having him look really great in that. And then I feel like this just undermined everything we just did.
Well, we get to have to wait and see. Maybe they take David Finlay through the J Cup and make him the winner of the J Cup. That way he can hand it into like Dominion and challenge for the world title. Maybe that's the plan operation here for New Japan Pro Wrestling.
That could be true too. Move him up, and you know, the next belt up.
Okay, we're moving on to our second sending question of the week. AEW went out and signed Jennifer Pepperman a week after she left WWE. Ashley, how big of an impact can she have in AEW?
From what I've seen, this is a pretty big signing for AEW. She seems to have quite a hand in helping with the women's division, and she's kind of, from what I've seen, being credited with kind of maybe coming in and pushing a focus on the women's division. Plus, I think it might be a great idea for Tony Khan to have a woman in kind of like that position to kind of bounce ideas off of.
You know, I kind of feel like this is a trend we've been seeing with Tony for like the last month now. He's been bringing people into the circle to help him out. And having this person on the market, easy to bring into the company with tons of experience. She's spent like the last decade in the WWE. She's a Oscar winning writer. Hey, why not? I mean, like, this seems to be a slam dunk. We'll just have to wait and see how it turns out on TV to have somebody with that kind of credibility in the ring with Tony, helping him ease the load that he carries. It can't be bad.
Exactly. And like I said, I think it's very good for him to have just a woman in that position to also bounce ideas off of to kind of get like a perspective.
Very true. So we'll just see how this plays out in the weeks that come on AEW TV. Speaking of AEW, we'll go over to the third stunning question of the week. If you didn't notice on Twitter, Jerry Lynn made a repost of a Sean Ross Sapp story where he was talking about Heyman Adam Page injury being a storyline that and Heyman was okay, and Jerry Lynn was kind of taking issues with that. So my question to you is, Ashley, can AEW use these type of storylines when they were a company that was built with the support of smart wrestling fans?
I feel like yes, because I feel like even now people know, I feel like it's not really going to affect anything. I feel like everyone's still kind of invested in everything that's going on with Swerve and Hangman and Joe. It does kind of suck, though, knowing that it was supposed to be like a surprise and like a cliffhanger and something to be revealed in the next week. And it is ruined by kind of these reporters putting everything out there to kind of update everything.
Well, you sent me over like a message, not the story, but a message after that match went off the air going like, hey, do you think Hangman Adam Page is hurt? And I went back and rewatched that match, and I thought he entered his back off that superplex spot. I thought that was what you were going to talk about. It was later on when I saw him laying by the guardrail, just shooting away the camera guy, going like, don't shoot me. I thought he was holding his ankle, so I thought, okay, he rolled his ankle. So I think we're all just putting one and one together, getting two. So personally, I feel like there's ways you can do this. I think what they should have done was basically have Tony Schiavone go off the air saying like, hey, we're going to keep the cameras rolling. We're at this point where we're running out of time. We're hitting that hard out for TBS or TNT. And we'll show you the stuff on Collision. And then you open up Collision with, hey, you know, after the fact that Hangman's face is good to go, he'll be there for Revolution.
Yeah, I think that's also what like kind of frightened people is they didn't say anything on air like regarding it. Like they didn't really acknowledge it. They kind of just was like, okay, and they went to the next spot. And it seemed more like the reports were coming out after as opposed to anything going on during the show, which I think if you kind of want to incorporate it into the storyline, like acknowledge it on the show, that way people aren't kind of like, everyone was, I think, was like just worried for the state of the Revolution main event after.
I think so as well. And I kind of agree in a way with Jerry Lynn. I feel like he's somebody who's spent so long in professional wrestling. He comes from the generation before a lot of these younger fans where it was more kayfabe. You didn't know all the stuff behind the scenes and stuff. So I can see his frustration here with this game leaked out and this kind of throwing a wrench in their plans in a way.
Yeah, but I think it kind of just calmed everybody down knowing that it is a work, and I think everyone will be okay with kind of past it and kind of just seeing what's to.
Well, we'll see how everything plays out here in the next couple of weeks on AEW TV. Now we're moving on to my fourth stunning question of the week here, if I could count. Fourth stunning question. During their respective interviews, who handled the Vince question better? Was it John Cena or Randy Orton? Now, if you don't know, John Cena was on Howard Stern's radio show, and he had a lengthy statement about this Vince McMahon sex trafficking case coming up, and it seemed to be really PR friendly, and he didn't really take Vince McMahon to task, while Randy Orton had an interview with Sports Illustrated where I felt personally Randy Orton had a better take on it. He's like, hey, I have seen everything you've seen and it's messed up. How do you feel, Ashley?
I feel like you do. I feel like Randy definitely gave more of what you'd expect in this sort of situation. It's sort of acknowledging like, yes, I know Vince McMahon and I have a relationship with Vince McMahon, but this is not okay. Where like John Cena's response of just saying like he loves him despite his faults was kind of just a very weird state.
Yeah, I was like trying to wrap my head around it. And, you know, I know both men, they owe a lot to this flawed human being that we know as Vince McMahon. Both these gentlemen have spent 20 plus years working with the WWE and are two of the biggest stars that come out of that generation of WWE. But I can see where Cena may was trying to find the right words or something, but it sounded so rehearsed and PR-ish, where Randy Orton just came off like, it's Randy Orton, and you expect Randy Orton to say something like that.
Yeah, it did feel like John Cena's words were very
cute. Okay, so we'll just keep track of that coming up here on Radio Free Professional Wrestling. We'll move on to the fifth stunning question of the week. And this one comes out of the Elimination Chamber, because there's a lot of Liv Morgan fans going like, hey, Liv Morgan should have this victory instead of Becky Lynch. So my question to you, Ashley, is Liv Morgan on the same level as Becky Lynch? And has Becky Lynch been overpushed?
I think like in terms of popularity, yes. And I think she's a lot improved in the ring over the past couple of years. So I just don't know if she's kind of like naturally on the same level as Becky Lynch. But I don't think Becky Lynch is overpushed either, especially in the last like year or so.
Okay, so my feeling is Liv came back at Royal Rumble. They already had this plan for Becky versus Rhea at WrestleMania already set. There's time for us to get to this Liv Morgan and Rhea Ripley revenge tour. I feel like that's going to be the story coming out of WrestleMania. And I'll go ahead. I'll lay it down right here, right now. Rhea Ripley will beat Becky Lynch at WrestleMania to retain this title. Now, you could have Liv Morgan beat her at SummerSlam for this title to give Liv Morgan a run during the fall and get that story told of her getting revenge for the person who put her out for like 9 months.
Yeah, I could see something like that. She's super popular and super over with the fans. I don't see why they wouldn't push her. She's been champion before, and I could definitely see them putting her in that spot, especially like something like that would certainly make sense.
And Liv Morgan had a fine showing at Elimination Chamber. She had a couple eliminations. She eliminated Bianca Belair,
who looked fantastic during.
And she also eliminated Tiffany Stratton, and that I thought might turn Liv heel to this Australian crowd. Okay, so we're moving on to my final stunning question of the week. And this comes from a match that happened a week before on Sunday. if you remember, Ashley, I was telling you when we were leaving the show, I was going to go watch this match. It's Michael Oku versus Will Ospreay for the Red Pole heavyweight title. This match is 47 minutes of pure perfection. It is my new match of the year. And we're in the last week of February 2024. But I'm saying right now, this is my match of the year. So, Ashley, do you believe this could be the match of the year?
Yes. I could definitely see it being very much a contender at the end of the year for pretty much anybody who's going to put together any sort of year-end awards. Will Ospreay kind of determined to, just continue this insane year he had in 2023, and I'm so excited to see him come into AEW.
Okay, so this match starts out with Will Ospreay holding a sword. Michael Oku walks up to the sword, puts his neck against the sword, and the first offensive move of the match is Will Ospreay chopping Michael Oku, and Michael Oku just walks off to the side like Samoa Joe and just brushes it off, and the look on Will Ospreay's face is priceless.
This kind of like storyline they've had going and the back and forth they've had going kind of leading up to this has been great. And like, what a payoff, and like to give this like rub in the spotlight to Michael Oku from Will Ospreay. Like, he's going to be like a king for British wrestling for the foreseeable.
Okay, so let me give you some backstory to this match. 2 years ago, they had their first meeting. Michael Oku lost it in his mind when he missed his frog splash, and then Will Ospreay took the offense and basically beat this guy to a bloody pulp in front of Michael Oku's family. And he kept the towel from that match. And at the start of this match, he tosses the towel over to Amira, who is the manager of Michael Oku. And one of the three ways this match could end is with Amira throwing the towel in. So you have that story going on. The other part of the story is Michael Oku repeating the same frog splash, missing it the first time, but he lands on his feet, goes into a different move, comes back to it, hits the frog splash. It starts the beginning of the end of the match, and he gives Will Ospreay three hidden blades of his own and picks him up from a pin to hit another hidden blade. There's so many little nuggets from the first match and the second match. If you have time, go watch the first match first, then watch this one. You're going to enjoy it so much more.
See? Goes to show that it doesn't always have to be about the promos and stuff. Like, the match can be the story. Like, and those matches are certainly quite the story now that everything has been put together.
Exactly. The story of this one is Michael Oku is burning the ship. He's going for it all. He needs Will Ospreay's respect. He has the title. He wants Will Ospreay's respect. And by the end of the 47 minute, he has Will Ospreay's respect. And Michael Oku gives the ring to Will Ospreay, and Will Ospreay spanks the crowd, and we end the show.
Like I said, he's going to be just on top of the British professional wrestling world just as long as he wants to be.
Well, you know, I feel like British pro wrestling is in good hands with this guy, because Michael Oku, he may be a generational talent, and somehow, some way, Britain has landed with back-to-back generational talents.
They've been giving us some really great ones over the past couple of years.
Okay, so that's going to end our Stunning Six questions for this week on Radio Free Professional Wrestling. We are heading over to the Control Center to catch you up on the week in professional wrestling news.
This is your Radio Free Pro Wrestling Control Center. All the wrestling news you need to know.
Okay, Ashley, this is a story you gave me early in the week. New Japan Pro Wrestling is starting a new working relationship with CWE. That's Costa Rica Wrestling Assembly. Now, this company has a lot of working relationships with CMLL. This company was founded in 2014. And I got a feeling this is just another place for the young lions of New Japan Pro Wrestling to cut their teeth.
Yeah, and seemingly just kind of ever-expanding this forbidden door theory we have. Very cool to see another promotion being in partnership.
You know, this new era, New Japan Pro Wrestling, that's kind of kicked off with Ospreay and Okada leaving, seems to have the people behind New Japan Pro Wrestling looking overseas and stuff to link up with different companies, because they're linking up with companies in Thailand and China and stuff. So this is going to be a very interesting year in New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, kind of interesting to see if anybody going out for excursion will be going to any of these.
And oh, by the way, CWE, get ready, because in May, Michael Oku is making an appearance in CWE. We'll let you know the date when it comes around, but I saw that on Michael Oku's website, so he's heading to this company. So, hey, this is going to be an interesting year for Michael Oku as well. So I'm going to move over to my second news story. Actually, we've been missing Kyle Fletcher, and now it's come out that he's having visa issues, and that's why he's not been able to be on AEW TV since January the 31st. So hopefully he can get his situation settled and get him back on TV, because Kyle Fletcher is one of the best young talents that AEW has, and him having this ROH TV title is great. And with Will Ospreay coming into the company, we kind of need Kyle Fletcher to join up with Will Ospreay.
Yeah, and we sort of need some Ring of Honor titles on Ring of Honor. So it's kind of another title that's been missing here for a little bit. I hope they do get it sorted soon, because I feel like we sort of see visa troubles come up quite often.
Yeah, see, we had a Pac with that. I think we had Penta as well that one time with AEW. So I feel like maybe it's more just the fact that it's the United States government, and this is always a complicated issue when he brings foreign people over to the U.S. and work. Is a lot of legal mojo that a lot of us don't understand. So hopefully they can get it settled, because I love to see Kyle Fletcher back in AEW.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with the kind of unexpected match between Will Hobbs and Sammy Guevara this week, I'd sort of love to see Sammy Guevara take on the rest of the Don Callis, Kyle Fletcher.
Oh, yes. I guarantee you that this Will Hobbs match versus Sammy Guevara is going to be in the top five matches of the week later on in the show. So allow me to go to the next news story, as we have TNA talent wanted Anthem to meet with Scott D'Amore and other TNA backstage employees before their No Surrender pay-per-view this past weekend. I know that the president of Anthem didn't meet with Scott D'Amore, but he was there and had a meeting before No Surrender, and Eric Young came out before the show started to do a speech. It seems like things are settling down a little bit in TNA, but we still got to keep an eye on it.
Yeah, it very much sucks for all these talents that were looking, you know, like forward to all these great changes and stuff that TNA had going and working with Scott, and now it's all been sort of suddenly taken away. And very interestingly, Josh Alexander was extended. He didn't resign. He was extended through his contract, kind of after requesting to not be.
Exactly. I remember this earlier this week, TNA announced that they first re-signed Josh Alexander. Josh Alexander's wife went on Twitter and replied, "You guys picked up his ascension." So it's interesting how TNA is playing this. Josh Alexander is easily their best talent they have in that company. I would be doing everything in my power to keep that guy happy, because you got him on a one-year ascension. So the bidding war of 2025 has started.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, it sucks because I don't blame talents for leaving, because this is not just a small shift. This is a shift in kind of like internal policy, essentially, and what's more important. And people there, I think, were more, it's our product. This is, you know, we're proud of what we're doing here. And now I feel like it feels like almost like the heart has been ripped out of it.
You know, I kind of agree with you, Ashley. I feel like the wrestlers of TNA feel like, hey, we spent the last 2 years building this sucker up to a point where we can take it to the next level. And Anthem's looking like, that's fine, but we're looking at this bottom line and we're happy where you're at. And, you know, I'm going to make a bold statement here. I feel like Anthem, by the end of 2024, maybe midway through 2025, may just decide, you know what, we're just happy with the TNA library, and they may not have anything to do with Impact Wrestling. They may just shut down the total Impact Wrestling company as we see it now and just do the tapes for a day. Just have, oh, we'll just put on some greatest matches on Thursday night for 2 hours.
It would suck if that does happen, because they've been around for so long, and even through like some really awful times, they've managed to stay afloat. But if it does happen, if anything like that does happen, it would solely be because the people that are coming in don't really care about wrestling in the way that like Scott D'Amore or the TNA wrestlers do. And to lose it because of that just would be the worst.
Yeah, my heart goes out to all the wrestlers who've spent a lot of years putting in the work to get this TNA wrestling back to a level where it was before the Hogan and Eric Bischoff era.
I truly hope that if they're not familiar with wrestling, they can at least understand that it can be something, especially with the trajectory that Scott D'Amore had them on. It could have been something for them. And it feels like to take away the person that could have shown them how much it could have been worth really is going to hurt the product.
Well, we get to see the new era of TNA wrestling as this coming up Thursday is the first set of shows from the tapings the day after No Surrender. So we'll just have to see and tell you guys next week on Radio Free Professional Wrestling. I'm moving on to my next news story as one good thing came out of No Surrender, and that's Mustafa Ali captures the TNA X Division title from Chris Sabin in one hell of a main event. So here we are. We got Mustafa Ali doing his world tour. Now he's this belt collecting as well.
Yeah. No, I think it's well-deserved. This guy has been kind of all over and just having great matches in pretty much every promotion.
True. And it's kind of crazy to think that Nick Nav and Mustafa Ali both lead the WWE and they now are champions of different promotions.
Yeah. And they both had like great matches for the titles. Like I said, the Nemeth and Finley match was very good. And I mean, Sabin and Ali was fantastic.
Exactly. If you haven't seen the Sabin versus Mustafa Ali match, go out and watch this match because it was interesting. It was a good match. I can't wait to see what Mustafa Ali does with TNA and the S Division title. There's a lot of good talent there for him to wrestle. And that's one thing about having these guys in different promotions. You have all these new matches that they can look forward to.
Yeah, and there's definitely a lot of dudes I want to see Ali.
Yes, this is Mustafa Ali World Tour. I'm right here with you. We're on the bandwagon. I think you're driving it, but I'm here too. We're moving on to my next news story of the week. You gave this to me just right before we went on air tonight. According to a Tokyo sports news story, Okada is leading New Japan Pro Wrestling with no intentions to come back. Ashley, do you see the Rainmaker never stepping foot back in New Japan Pro Wrestling?
I have no idea because even watching the shows this weekend on commentary, they were like, oh, this is Okada's final match in New Japan for the foreseeable future. And like we all know that like if he does actually end up 100% signing with AEW, that the option would always be there to have matches again in New Japan. But this quote makes it seem like Okada does not want that.
It's interesting because I watched both matches over the weekend before you gave me this story. And I'm going to link this story in the notes for the podcast and here on YouTube underneath the description here. When I put the video version of the podcast later on Monday, you'll have all the news stories right there for you to read. And it seems like it goes against what I saw Okada's reaction was at the end of the show, because at the end of the second night, Naito brings him into the ring and they kind of goof around in the ring for a minute and they kind of have a laugh and a hug. And Okada kind of seemed emotional as he was leaving the ring. I felt like, yeah, is this guy that might come back in a year or two? He just needs to go somewhere else, do some matches, face a new opponent. But his heart is New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah, I did love that little spot too at the end. Like I said, this is like reading that quote kind of threw me off because even if Okada had gone to or ended up in WWE, I would still think at the end of it, he would go back to Japan for like one final run.
I would too. You think he would want to end his wrestling career there where he started? We'll just have to keep an eye out and see how the story plays out because we're in the beginning stages of this. It's like a football player retiring from an NFL team after 15, 20 years of being with that team. Right now, he may feel one way, but who knows? 6 months, 9 months, 12 months down the road, hey, Wrestle Kingdom is coming up. First Wrestle Kingdom with Noah Okada. Come around to the next Wrestle Kingdom. Okada might go like, hey, do you want me to come over and do a special return match?
Right. And what do we say? Never say never.
Exactly. In wrestling, you never say never. So this is going to end our control center here on Radio Free Professional Wrestling for February the 25th, 2024. Ashley, it's our favorite segment of the week. It's mine and yours, top five matches of the week.
It's Sean and Ashley's top five matches of the week. As they count down their five favorite matches from the past week, did your favorite match make the cut?
Okay, Ashley, like we normally do a lot of times here on this show, me, you have some matches, maybe just in a different order, but we have a few matches that are kind of similar on our list. So I'm going to let you go first. As your number five match of the week came on AEW Collision, it's Will Hobbs versus Sammy Guevara in one hell of a match.
A very unexpected match. A match in which We saw a lot of really great chemistry between Sammy Guevara and Will Hobbs in this kind of story they've had with Sammy Guevara taking on Don Callis' family. But I think one of the most important things this match showed us was that Sammy Guevara can get over sans Jericho.
Who would imagine he can escape the vortex of Jericho and actually have some good matches? And this was one hell of a match.
I feel like we started off with kind of like the same old Sammy getting booed, not a lot of crowd support. And about halfway through, he really won them over. And it was kind of like a split, more of a split, you know, for him and Hobbs. And then he was getting a lot of cheers. He is so good in the ring. It is hard to like doubt him that way. His promos still need work, but I thought this was a very good match. The chemistry here was crazy, and I would love to see them have another match.
You know what? Let's give some love to Will Hobbs, because Will Hobbs is one hell of a big man. And I was thinking during this match, you know, it's fine he's managed by Don Callis, but could you imagine him being managed by Mark Henry, as we saw him use the World's Strongest Slam off the second rope into a table? And I'm going like, this guy needs Mark Henry by his side.
That could be a really good pairing, especially because we don't see Mark Henry too much without having like the like dark elevation for him to do commentary on that he was always doing. So that'd be a nice way to get him kind of involved.
And we got to talk about this ladder spot that Sammy Guevara did. This ladder was freaking tall as heck. But you know, this might be one of the more safer Sammy Guevara ladder spots I've seen in a while.
Yeah, I think it landed like pretty perfectly. And I honestly, one of my favorite spots was the Will Hobbs spine buster off the apron through the tables on the outside.
I got a feeling that before Arn Anderson left AEW, he kind of taught Will Hobbs how to do the spine buster, because that spine buster is like an Arn Anderson spine buster.
Yeah, and I'm glad he's getting into this, whatever this, I guess it's just a triple threat match, but he's getting involved in this match at Revolution with Wardlow and...
Exactly, the Heavy Hoss match, or like the Meat Revolution match, or whatever they're calling it. Is this going to be a banger of a big man match?
Yeah.
Okay, so my number five match happened today, and I'm going to Progress Chapter 162. It's Twisted Steel. This is Progress Wrestling's first live streaming pay-per-view. And in the main event, Steel Cage, Kid Lykos versus Spike Turbe. Spike Turbe has been Progress World Champion for 546 days until today, as Kid Lykos defeats Spike Turbe inside the Steel Cage. And hopefully this is still free. If it's free, go over to Demand Progress Plus and check this card out. This card was freaking awesome. You got Sanity versus the Smoking Aces for the Progress Tag Team title. After this show, I'm going to literally go and watch this card.
Yeah, I'm going to have to, if that's kind of up for free, I might have to go check that out.
Okay, so we're moving over to Ashley's number four match of the week. And this one happened on AEW Collision. And it's just Brian Danielson versus yet another great Japanese wrestler. Please just keep continuing this week after week. This has been fun.
Yes, it's been crazy to see Brian Danielson just kind of taking on like whoever he wants, wherever he wants, kind of just handpicking everything. But this match kind of having, on top of kind of probably being a match that Brian Danielson just wanted to have, also kind of factoring into his match going into Revolution. I love Eddie Kingston being out there in commentary, kind of calling the match. And Brian Danielson and Akiyama beat the hell out of each other. And at the end, Danielson flips off Eddie Kingston. Akiyama takes exception, tells him, hey, knock it off. To which Brian Danielson swiftly kicks him between his legs, and Eddie Kingston runs in and starts beating him down, kind of leading into another fight, leading into all sorts of run-ins and a breakdown of sorts. And I'm very excited for this trios match it set up, but I honestly, I think Danielson and Kingston might be one of my most anticipated matches on the Revolution.
Well, first, Wednesday night on Dynamite, it's the Blackpool Combat Club versus FTR and Eddie Kingston. So there's that one first. That's going to be a heck of a match. And just like you said, at Revolution, it's the American Dragon versus Eddie Kingston. And if Eddie Kingston beats the American Dragon, Brian Danielson has to shake the hand of Eddie Kingston. And after this episode of Collision, I can't wait for Eddie Kingston to win this and Brian Danielson to be disgusted having to shake the guy's hand.
I love his dynamic, is that he is pretty much a beloved baby face against every single other person, but Eddie Kingston, he is just one of the worst heels.
And of course, we can't not mention the fact that Nigel McGuinness, yet again, down there preaching to anybody who will listen that Brian Danielson is not the greatest wrestler in the world.
Sorry, Nigel. I think different.
Okay, so we're moving over to my number four match of the week. It comes from the first night of the New Japan New Beginning in Sapporo. It's the New Japan Pro Wrestling Global title match. Nick Nemeth versus David Finlay was one hell of a match. Even though I kind of not sure about the outcome with flipping the title over to Nick Nemeth, but this is a fine professional main event.
Yeah, no, very good. And one of the best matches on the card. I agree with the ending, though. I'm still not sure about taking the title off Finlay so soon, but it's a tough call because Nick Nemeth is so good.
He is. And you know what? Ever since he threw two House of Torture matches to get to this one, it was well worth it, okay?
Such a reprieve. The House of Torture match is absolute. What a wet towel on those cards.
Oh, just imagine you waking up and that's the first thing you see is the count out victory for the junior heavyweight title. Then, oh, by the way, hey, never open title. Here's Evil. And you're going like, yeah, Evil's going to drop this belt. Oh, no. They got to push Evil.
Just the like 7 minute interference spot at the end of that match. I was like, I can't do it anymore. The lights go out. Every single member of House of Torture is out there. Like, this is a symptom of this, like, that babyface stuff we talk about sometimes, about like babyface not having any friends, or like, it doesn't even make sense. They've had friends that were there that have helped and they didn't help this time around. I don't know. Just one of those matches.
True. Well, let's go over to your number three match of the week as it comes from AEW Dynamite. It opened up AEW Dynamite. And we're talking about the 20-minute draw between FTR and the Blackpool Combat Club being Jon Moxley and Kalio Kasanoi. One hell of a match. And you knew it was going to a time limit draw because they eventually mentioned, hey, 15 minutes done, 5 minutes left.
That is the one thing I do want to preface this with. AEW, stop making it so obvious when you're going to do a time limit draw. If every match has a time limit, acknowledge the time limit in every single match. You're making it way too obvious as to when it's going to happen if you're only in those matches. But otherwise, pretty much as expected, it's FTR, it's Blackpool Combat. They beat the hell out of each other to the draw, and we have a couple of more matches with them running it back. So
true. This was a heck of a match, and the fact that the crowd was chanting 5 more minutes, and they didn't get 5 more minutes, but hey, they just literally brawled back up from the backstage area. And eventually they get the match added to Revolution. So, hey, it's a win-win. So let's go over to my number three match of the week. Now I'm going to the second night of New Beginning in Sapporo. It's hair versus hair. Yota Tanahashi, Yuma. This was a 30-minute time limit hair versus hair match. And literally going into minute 20, you're thinking this might be a time limit draw as well. You're wondering what was going to happen.
This match was honestly fantastic. I have it on my list as well. This is the kind of match that I think those guys needed to have. These shows with Okada, Ospreay, and even somebody like Tamatanga, who leaving has sort of been more swept under the rug with the kind of bigger departures of Ospreay and Okada. But Tamatanga leaving is big news too. He's been there for 15 years. He's been a constant stalwart presence there, and to have him take off too is another blow to their roster. And New Japan has a lot of these young guys like Tsuji, like Uemura, that they need to invest in right now. There's no time like the present, and every, you know, with all your big stars leaving, you have to kind of create some new ones and quickly. And I think Yota Tsuji and Uemura kind of went out there with the intention of showing New Japan, like, we got this. We can help you. Like, let us carry it.
And goodbye to Okada. And you're wondering what's going to be the next thing for New Japan Pro Wrestling. This was the shining light. This is like, hey, these are the next generation talent who could be the main event of Wrestle Kingdom in the future for 10, 15 years.
Absolutely. And like I said, like, Okada's gone. Like, he's gone now. Ospreay is gone now. Tamatanga is gone now. Like, you need to find replacements, but you can't kind of just let it toil. You've built up Yota, you've built up Uemura, you've built up Shota Umino over the past couple of years. It's time to pull the trigger on that.
Well, you know what? This was the best match of the two nights in Sapporo. In my opinion, the best match.
This is Sergeant Arms of Christina on behalf of the guys. Thanks for listening to today's show. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a 5-star rating and a review. Until next time, the liberation continues.